Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
And we're back. Brown Ambition.
No, hey, hey, hey.
Oh, I feel like I haven't done hey, hey, hey in a little while.
You know what we really should do, since this is a holy day of, it's a holy bee day. Mm-hmm. It is our,
oh, yes,
our queen's birthday, Queen Bay. Bay.
And supposedly she's 35, which I totally do not believe, but that's okay.
I believe it. You know what? I watched... Because I'm a nerd. I was watching MTV, like, old clips of Beyonce from, like, her first performance when Dangerously in Love came out. And mm-hmm. You can see the change, like, from young Beyonce to, like, Lemonade Beyonce. I'm just so proud of her.
Yeah, no, I am proud of her. I mean, speaking of which, did you catch on? Did we talk about this? The MTV Music Awards?
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit. Yeah,
okay,
You know, yeah. We didn't... I totally forgot all about... Wait, did we talk about Drake and Rihanna?
What, that they're, like, together, it seems?
It's so awkward.
Yeah, it is. But it's really cute, though, because I'm like, you know what? He seems nice to her, which is saying a lot in comparison to where she's been before.
Well, that was last week. This week, I can't look at anything without reading about this Lena Dunham situation.
OMG. Yes, please bring it to the table. Bring it to the table of foolishness. The foolish
I
table.
I wish she would stop. Like, I really do. I thought we had, like, a break from Lena Dunham. I haven't heard much from her in a while. She had the Lenny letter. That's all fine. Women empowerment newsletter. But whenever she opens her mouth, just, like, foolishness comes out.
So share with the BA listeners, like, what's happened.
Well, if you've been living under a rock, basically, so Lena Dunham interviewed Amy Schumer because Amy Schumer's new book is coming out this September. And it was just a Q&A where it's like the easiest thing ever. You just write down a transcript of what you said. And during the Q&A, they got to talking about the Met Gala they had both been at. And Lena Dunham sat next to, what's his name?
Odell Beckham.
Odell Jr. Beckham, thanks. I don't really watch sports.
Neither do I, but I just pulled it up and I was like, there it is.
Odell Beckham. So she sat next to Odell Beckham, and in the interview transcript of with her Amy interview, she was talking about how, yeah, I was sitting next to Odell Beckham Jr. and I guess he just looked at me and decided that, like, I was not the shape of a woman that he wanted to fuck. And so he just was on his phone all night and decided that I wasn't, you know, worth his time. And I guess she was trying to be like a little self-deprecating, mm-hmm. but Twitterati, Black Twitter, has dragged her to the point of she has now released an Instagram apology.
Yo, Black Twitter, honestly, y'all could move mountains.
You just,
but no, sincerely, like, because what I didn't like at first, she was like, whatever, I can say what I want, that's how I was feeling. But then after being dragged, I guess, for a further distance, she recognized, or I think she wrote something to the effect that some people had reached out to her that she really respected. It was like, girl, you're wrong. Like, that man said literally nothing to you. And for you to say all of these things, like, you're supposed to be this big feminist. And that was the, you know, not only are you going against all things feminism and people having a choice to do and say what they like, if he would have said something to you, you would have had a problem with that too. It was just so crazy and so narcissistic.
Very narcissistic. Well, you know what the thing is? I mean, take away the fact that she's a white woman and he's a black man, and, you know, and athletes, black male athletes especially, and women too, this code of conduct, this, like, unofficial code of conduct that just involves minority athletes for some reason is just crazy. But take away all that, and it's completely hypocritical
in terms of like the feminist argument against men, you know how when you, I don't know, you've never dated online or anything like that, but like a lot of my girlfriends have, and when I was online dating, like you, or not even just online dating, but anytime a woman doesn't talk to a man or doesn't respond when he says hello on the street or catcalls her, and then he just like lashes back and says, oh, you're just stuck up. Oh, you're just snobby. Oh, you just, you know, you don't think I'm good enough. You're just, you know, a big snob or whatever. And that's exactly what she did to Odell Beckham Jr. So it's like the most sexist reaction to being ignored by a person of the opposite sex.
It's like, girl, no one is thinking about you. Someone was like, honestly, if Lena, whatever her name is, Dunham, would walk into a room, I wouldn't recognize her. It's not, you know, like, I don't know what she looks like. No one has to say hello. No one has to speak. I could see if you said, I spoke to him or whatever, and he said nothing back. He was a little bit rude. But, like, literally, you sat there, he sat there. What's the problem?
Yeah. But he ignored her. In her apology, she says, I mean, you know, she apologized. She listened to the critics. But this isn't the first time that she's had to apologize. I believe there was a lot of controversy in the beginning of Girls Coming Out, where, once again, just like Sex and the City, it was a show about four women who were all white, about their experience in New York with all their white friends. And sort of like, and there was a lot of controversy about that. And she said some really offhanded, like, unintelligent responses to that, very defensive, like just like this, you know, oh well, it's my perspective and doesn't matter, I can say whatever I want. And then very quickly came around, and in her apology she just basically says, I was, you know, projecting my own insecurity about being, you know, an average body type woman at the Met Gala, where everyone's like a swan and like an Amazon creature. And I totally get that. I would probably feel insecure in the same situation too, but yeah, I think it just was a projection of those insecurities. And instead of, you know, making it about that, she cast Odell Beckham Jr., who asked for none of this, like, doesn't even know her, in this negative light. And he just might be a very nice gentleman in real life.
Exactly. And I'd say this, that if, I don't know, like, it just seems so crazy, because I get it. You being a celebrity amplifies, you know, whatever you speak. But then you have to just be more mindful and know that you can say whatever you want, but then in the same breath, anyone can respond to you however they like. And they responded.
This was like the female version of like men telling women to smile.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Speaking of sports, we have not talked about Mr. Colin, who is the gentleman that refuses to stand up during the national anthem. Yeah, Kaepernick's.
I do not know sports. I do know this controversy, but I don't know his name either.
Yes, his name is Colin Kaepernick. I'm thinking I'm saying it right. So he doesn't want to stand up during the national anthem, which is his total right. And then, of course, there was this outcry.
For what reason? Was it Black Lives Matter? Like a protest against brutality?
Yeah, he didn't say Black Lives. He said that he feels like that the country is not what it ought to be for all people. So as a result, he's not going to stand. Yes. And so, and then, you know, of course, people were like, wait, so Donald Trump is able to say, make the country great, indicating that we're not great. And this gentleman can say the country's not great. So Donald Trump says, it's yes, Donald, save us. This young man says it, and it's, oh, you terrible person, you better stand up or else, you know.
Well, we just saw this at the Olympics with Gabby Giffords, the gymnast, although she wasn't doing it for like political reasons. She just, you know, forgot to put her hand on her chest or whatever during the national anthem. I don't really feel any kind of way about it. I mean, it's one person. It's the national anthem. It's freedom of speech. Do whatever you want. Like,
and that's exactly what, and honestly, what I really like is that there's this new hashtag vets for Colin, I think. And what they're saying basically is like, yes, I fought for him to have the right to choose. Like, hell, well, that's the point of the, like, it's so crazy how people are like, you had better. No, isn't that the point of this country, is that you have the freedom to choose what you want to do? And, like, to actually try to force him to do otherwise is in direct opposition to the whole point of the daggone national anthem in the first place. Freedom.
Freedom, I can't move. Sorry. It's still Beyonce Day.
And I'm just like, oh, well, so we'll see how it goes. I mean, he's definitely antagonizing.
But now, like, it's awkward, because then now every game, everyone's going to be looking at him. And, like, what if he just gets tired of it?
I know. Well, I mean, that's why you have to pick your battles. And, you know, he's picked this one, and I'm not mad at him.
You know what we haven't talked about yet that I've had on my list for a while? Every once in a while you hear this, but it's starting to have like another resurgence. Like I feel like once every couple of years there's a big bank black movement, where everyone's trying to encourage people to bank exclusively with black owned banks and businesses and stuff. And I just wanted to get your take on it.
I'm not opposed to it. I mean, I used to work with a black bank. Like I used to be do like financial education classes with a black bank. And what I like about black banks is that obviously you are more likely, if you're a person of color, to if you needing a loan and needing like certain services that you would typically get denied for at a bigger bank. Black banks tend to be smaller banks and tend to, like credit unions, look at you as the individual versus just like what they see on paper. And so I saw that firsthand, like, you know, really getting to know the business owner that's asking for this money. What are you doing? How are you helping the community? How can we actually help? Like I said, they sent me the black bank. It was City National Bank. I think they're only located in Jersey and New York, but they used to send me to different areas around Jersey and New York to teach financial education. And I, like, specifically just for the fact of just teaching it. To showing people, you know, so I like that. I mean, you know, I'm not opposed to that. I think that
I was going to say, I don't know if people realize that redlining still happens like today. Mm-hmm. And redlining is where banks put these, they probably call them marketing lines, their target audience for their loans and who they're going to extend, especially in the mortgage loan business. They draw lines around zones and communities where they want to target. And usually those lines are between white neighborhoods and minority neighborhoods. And essentially they won't lend to anyone or market to anyone outside those neighborhoods or put branches in those neighborhoods. So access to loans for houses, you're a lot less likely to get that access if you're a minority. And that still happens. It's sad.
It is. And that's why I think that it's, to me, it's important that that's why financial education is important. That's why creating our own wealth is important. And then that's why I just think that most people don't understand that we have the power within us to create the things that we need. We've seen it through, like, you know, Black Wall Street and other things that there's, you know, you don't necessarily have to go outside yourself to look for someone to save you. That, you know, if we create these resources ourselves and then we patronize these resources ourselves, you know, then you don't have to ask for, you know. That's what I'm learning, that, like, okay, when someone says no, well, how could I do this myself anyway with the resources I currently have? And, you know, it's possible. And so I think that's another way to do that. And, you know, because I mean I use a mix. Like I said, City National Bank was great. I also have like a traditional larger bank. I always believe that people sometimes act as if banking is like this one sided. I'm like, girl, to me, you should have a traditional bigger bank, just for the ease of, like, no matter where I am in this country, I know I can, like, you know, get to what I need to get to. You should have a credit union, because if you're borrowing money, sorry, traditional big bank, not you. So either credit union or like a local small black bank, those are, you're going to get, one, you have the opportunity to actually possibly borrow. Two, you know, typically you'll get a better interest rate, especially with credit unions. And then I also believe that you should have an online-only bank, because you're going to get higher interest rates for your savings accounts. And online-only banks, for me, help me to not impulse buy, because if I put my money there, it takes like 2 to 5 business days to transfer that money back to my regular bank. So if I really want to save something and not spend it, I put it there. I believe you should have a mix of banks. That gone are the days, or I have this one bank, that's all I use. Girl, there's no loyalty here. I use the bank that's best for me, not what's best for them.
Well, I think it's not even loyalty, but people like the ease of just having everything in all one place, you know. I think it takes a special person to be able to have the different kind of, not special, but just someone who's willing, or like sees the financial opportunity and like wants to put in the work to sort of manage all those different accounts. But especially if you're old school, you know, people like having that feel. But what I'll say about it is, like, black owned does not always mean better for your wallet. And I think we can, I mean, when I'm shopping around for financial products, I always look at, you have to look carefully at the terms, the fees, the cost of the account. I mean, this movement is awesome and it's super positive. And a lot of times black owned banks are smaller banks, and those banks already have lower fees and things like that. But on the other side of the spectrum, you look at the Rush card, you know, owned by, created by Russell Simmons, huge in the Black community, celebrity status. People think this man's like a demigod or something like that, but this card is terrible. Like,
it is.
These are out of control. Then you got Steve Harvey representing the Green Dot card. I mean, wasn't Montel Williams like doing something crazy? I forget what he was hawking for a while, but I mean, I would just say, just because there is a Black face on a product, doesn't mean that it is good for you. So always read the fine print, always sort of look at your personal financial situation before you kind of get swept up in the face of an organization. And I can tell you right now, the actual CEO of Unirush, which is the company that owns the Rush card, is not a Black man.
Exactly.
It's not Russell Simmons.
Exactly. Don't think of that's just the face. That's like, I was telling Mandy offline, BA listeners, that like one of these these tea companies, you know, you see everybody drinking these celebrities drinking these teas and saying how they lost all this weight. One of them reached out to me, was like, "Hey, Tiff, we'd love to pay you big money, send you some tea, and then you can tell everybody you used it and your stomach is flat." So, and I said, obviously I said no, because I was like, girl, goodbye. Have you even looked at my timeline? I don't talk about I talk about health stuff, but like the stuff that I'm actually doing, like going to the gym or taking a walk or whatever. But it just goes to show you that, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of companies just reaching out to random folks saying, hey, here's some money. So you want to discern for yourself what's the best fit for you.
Yes. At the end of the day, you're your best advocate and you have to be. But if you're interested in learning more, I found, what was this website? I was going to point everyone to this website, and then I got swept up reading more about the movement. I actually read that because of this movement. I didn't realize it was started by Killer Mike.
Yeah, which is hilarious in so many ways.
But one bank in Atlanta actually got 8,000, Citizens Trust Bank, which I didn't even know was Black-owned bank. My dad banks with them. Okay. Citizens Trust had like 8,000 new members.
That's awesome.
Because of this movement.
Is it Investors Bank? I think Investors
Citizens
Bank.
Citizens Trust. Now I just clicked off the site. But real quick, though, if you want to find a list of Black-owned banks, I think there's a map. You can go to blackoutcoalition.org. Seems to have... Oh, okay. When you go onto their website, it's like a Martin Luther King Jr. video starts playing. That's good, Brandon. Okay. And then there's a site called oneunited.com. I'll put some links to this on our brand new flashy website, which should be up by the time this podcast airs.
Yes.
Brown ambition got a makeover.
We fancy now that we won.
All right, BA fam, y'all know when it comes to financial advice, you have to trust your source. That's why you listen to Brown Ambition, right? And when I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. I've been a longtime fan of NerdWallet. In fact, I almost work there a couple of times because when it comes to financial experts and writing, they really know how to give you the best reviews of financial products. I honestly wouldn't sign up for a credit card today if I hadn't looked at a review on a site like NerdWallet myself. And honestly, if y'all haven't learned about NerdWallet, you're missing out. And with their help, what could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms of each credit card issuer apply.
Boosting and breaking. I think I'm going to give a brown boost to, I'm not going to break. I want to give a brown boost, and I probably said this before, but Black Twitter and like an extension brown boost of just like Blackness in general. So Black Twitter to me is like just life, because when something goes wrong, if you bring it to Black Twitter is like, I'm going to get my older brother, like the older brother or older sister that was bigger and stronger and the neighborhood was inherently afraid of them.
Right.
That is what Black Twitter is. You're like, oh, you talking slick? Let me go get my big sister. Black Twitter will come and drag your adversary from here to Tuesday and then say something again and we'll force your hand. And so I just want to bring, like, sometimes the internet, although it can be very foolish and it can be a lot, that Black Twitter gives me life when they drag appropriate people who need to be dragged. And, you know, basically, like, no, girl, you can't get away with that. Something has to be said. And it's not even just for fun and giggles, but, like, also, too, you know, there's a lot of things that happen. Like George Zimmerman was prosecuted because Black Twitter and social media demanded at least something. No, he wasn't prosecuted, but at least his, like, that Trayvon Martin story was told. Hmm. You know, that wasn't going to happen otherwise. And so, yeah, I want to give a boost to Black
Twitter. It's getting more organized, too. You know, I saw when this whole Lenny letter, Lena Dunham, Odell Beckham Jr. drama came out earlier last week. I saw DeRay McKesson, who's like one of the original Black Lives Matter movement members, right? Mm-hmm. And he's now a civil rights activist. He's based in Baltimore. Anyway, tons of followers on Twitter. He was basically like, Black Twitter, can you get on this early before the news gets ahead of this and starts twisting this and turning it into something it's not, and just let them know what's wrong with this whole Lena Dunham situation? Mm-hmm. I mean, he tweeted that out. And so you see them like getting more organized and like getting ahead of an issue like right away.
Okay.
And like getting your voices heard early. That's interesting.
Yeah. And so when you think of, for those of you who don't realize that Twitter, I think is it 1/3 of Twitter it's supposed to be African-American? Black?
I wouldn't be surprised if it was more, but
yeah, so it's a force to be reckoned with.
Go Black Twitter, go.
So what's your booster break?
I would like to do, well, this is gonna be it's gonna be a boost, but it's also gonna be a conversation, because I want to get your take on this too. So okay. I feel like the fall is the new official start of the wedding season, where spring used to be wedding season. Like for me, fall has become like the season of weddings, fall and winter. So I think people found out it was cheaper to get married in colder seasons, blah, blah, blah. So I'm already getting texts from friends who are like, yo, how much do I give? I can only afford this, but I feel like I should pay, you know, how much my plate probably costs at dinner. Like, what's the etiquette around paying, you know, gifts at weddings, and like how much should you give? And I feel like, I guess the break and the boost here is like a break from the pressure to give a ton of money at weddings, and a boost to giving what you can afford to give and like not feeling so guilty about it. Mm. And I do want to like debunk the myth. So my fiance too has said that whenever because we've been going to weddings for a while together, but because all his friends have gotten married, and every time it's like, well, you know, we should probably at least pay for the cost of our meal. And I'm like, well, how do you know how much it costs your, like, how do you know how much your
meal costs? Yeah, when people say that, yeah, I'm like, how do you, well, what I've done is depending on, like, because there's been times when I've had, like, next to no money, but most couples are registered somewhere. And so at least if you're registered, let's just say I only have $30. At least if you're registered, at least I'm like, well, let me go get something off the registry. So at least I know that what I'm getting them is exactly what they want, even though I might not have $150, you know?
That's the thing, though. Everyone is now doing these honeymoon funds, like instead of registries. Like a lot of my friends, and some are just doing straight up PayPal links, like directly so you can do it, because with PayPal, you pay fewer fees. There's a bunch of websites now. There's like Zola Registry, where you can set up like a cash, like a kind of like a GoFundMe page for your wedding gifts, and you can just submit payments by credit card or debit or whatever. But those sites sometimes take like a percentage, or not sometimes, most of them do take like a 2-3% cut of whatever people give you. So to get around that, people are now putting just straight up PayPal links on their wedding websites. And I think it's like, and instead of having registries, because I mean, people now tend to live together already, or they already have a bunch of stuff. Like they don't really need the fancy KitchenAid mixer, and they're not looking for, you know, pots and pans and stuff. So they just do the straight up honeymoon registry. And I'm totally fine with that. I think that's, you know, great. At least, you know, you're contributing toward their trip, and that's an experience or whatever. But I think it makes things a little bit more difficult, because now they're, in some cases, there's not like the registry to sort of fall back on.
I mean, I say give what you can. When I didn't have like a ton of money to do, I say give what you can. People, if someone is really your friend, like let's just say you think to yourself like, ugh, like, you know, this is a friend that's not that much of a friend. It's just kind of like, you know, they've invited everybody to their wedding. If you feel that weird about it, don't go. But if this is really your friend, then, you know, give what you can. I guess I'm not all that, like, you know, now that Superman and I are really, like, you know, talking about, like what our wedding is going to be like if we even have one. We were just talking about justice of the peace and a big party. I don't even know what I'm going to do as far as like that's concerned. Because you're right. We already live together. We already have stuff. I mean, likely we'll do some sort of like, hey, give money if you want to. Give what you can, I guess. But I don't, I really just want people to have a good time, you know?
And I think that's how it should be. Like, as the couple hosting the wedding, I mean, I look at it as like an act of generosity. Like, mm-hmm. we want to celebrate our love. We want you to be a part of it. We're throwing this party for you and for us. But you do hear, like, I mean, I've heard some bitter brides who have grumbled, yeah. who've been grumbling about, you know, I barely paid off half the wedding with what I got in gifts. And I'm like, well, that's
well,
not,
girl, that's your not problem. A good plan.
That's not how you budget yeah. for a wedding.
Exactly.
Well,
it's not.
Let's put in 20 because we're definitely going to get 20,000 back in gifts. No, honey. That's no. Not happening.
Not I don't happening. Think that, to me, that's on the bride then because I don't.
And the like, groom. I don't want to, not just the bride thing, true. But like the couple, you know?
Yes. Because I remember when my sisters got married, they paid with cash. Like, my sister had actually invested in stocks a few, like, when she got engaged. And by the time she got married, she sold some of them to pay for the wedding. She and her husband, they both invested. It was like, okay, this is our plan. But the, and I don't think the idea was we're going to get that money back. My other sister, she's just a really good saver. She had saved everything, her husband now, they saved in cash. And I think they got back most of their money, but that was not the point. They weren't like, well, we'll spend this much because we know we're going to get it back. Although Nigerians tend to be very generous, you know? That wasn't the plan. The plan was, she said, I don't want to owe when the wedding is done. So I'm going to save all the money that we need between he and I. And they did, you know? And so
you want to lower your expectations.
Exactly. And they ended up, because my parents helped a lot too. So they ended up, she was like, before I even get any money back, I want to give money back to mommy and daddy. So, because, you know, they're closer to retirement. So they did. So, yeah, I would say brides and grooms to be like, you know, make sure that you're having the wedding for what it's supposed to be for, a celebratory event, not a place to get and gain money.
I would like to know if anyone out there has been like, I have heard at one of my, I'm not going to call her out. One of my friends has asked me like, oh, so-and-so's check bounced. Do I tell him? And my answer was no, you don't tell him. I mean, how awkward is that? You know?
Yeah, I wouldn't probably. I'd be like, yeah, no, I don't. I mean, unless they were paying for a product or service, then I would just let that go.
It's kind of like a donation in a way. Like, it's too awkward. You got to see them at next family reunion and Christmas. Like, maybe just let it go.
Unless we were really close, like if it was my sister, I'd be like, girl, your check bounced. Everything okay?
Oh, wedding etiquette.
Do we have any questions? You know, we're Brown Ambition, so this is the ambition part of our podcast. Do we have any questions, financial questions, career questions?
We have a cool question today. It's actually probably a good question for you since you are about to go on a big trip. But this week, our question is from listener Lisa. Hi, Lisa. She has a question about travel. So I'll just read it real quick. She says, you guys are both avid travelers from what I've heard. I recently watched a video from a travel group called No Madness about a tragedy that happened where people were killed and injured in a car accident in Panama. The speaker really emphasized the need for travel health insurance. And since I'm currently planning a trip to Thailand for the first time, I'm wondering if this is something that I need. Have either of you ever used travel health insurance? And if so, what company? And do I need it if I already have regular health insurance? Great question.
It is. So first of all, I want to say kudos. No, I'm actually a part of No Madness, and the founder, Evita, she's a friend of mine. And so I'm just like, yay. And yes, I remember it was in Panama. It was not an official No Madness trip. It was just a bunch of No Madness tribe members that happened to meet up on this trip. They took a tour and the bus, they were going around they were going into the mountains, and the bus somehow careened off the side of a mountain. And actually, a good friend of mine, NECA, who I've known since I was, I don't even know, 18, died in that bus crash. It was a very traumatic time for you know, No Madness, their families, and because not everyone passed away. So some people were stuck there, like, well, how do we get, because they had to go to hospitals, they had to be airlifted out, like, you know, how do we get help? And it was then that I realized that, like, I had gotten health insurance when I went to India, because I was like, I don't want to be sick, you know, this far from home and not have adequate health insurance. So I would say, yes, it is critical to get additional health insurance, because if something happens to you, you have to be moved or you have to be looked after. You don't want to have to worry about it. It's really not that expensive. I'm trying to remember the name of the company that I used for health insurance.
So you have bought additional health insurance for your travels before. Mm-hmm. I think, well, first off, I'll say just check your current policy. There's some, if you have a big policy, like with Blue Cross Blue Shield or like an Aetna, some policies do offer worldwide coverage, and that doesn't mean that you'll be covered anywhere you go, but they will list, like, they'll have a list of providers in different major cities. And just start, I would use that as a starting place, because they may have like the catastrophic coverage. So if you do need to be airlifted, I mean, that's the real risk. That's the thing that scares people, right? Is that you'll be so hurt that you'll have to be like flown out of the country. And that's where it costs you like anywhere from $30,000 to up to $50,000. Mm-hmm. I've heard it can cost you. And that's terrifying. But some of those, like, your policy may already cover it. And your credit card, honestly, I have an amazing travel credit card. I'm covered up to $10,000 if I get sick before going on a trip, which is the kind of situation that, like, so there's, and this isn't health insurance, I'm talking about like trip protection, but I think that's another kind of concern people have when they're traveling, like, what happens if I'm too sick to travel, or I, you know, miss a tour because I'm too sick? You should definitely check out your credit card benefits and see if you're covered, like, mm-hmm. for anything like that first. So see what you have already in your arsenal, like tools, before you spend the money on insurance. How much did your policy cost that you
paid for? Honestly, it was nominal. I remember it was like well below $100. I found the company. It was called sevencorners.com. So Seven Corners, I bought this, I bought coverage for India. I'm actually pulling up my policy now. It was maximum amount of $1 million. I think, you know, I bought this for Greece, actually. And I think I paid, I'm looking to see how much I paid, but I remember that it was nominal in comparison to having $1 million worth of coverage to not have to worry about it.
I used to read The Frugal Traveler mm-hmm. through the New York Times when it was Seth Kogel. And he recommended the site called worldnomads.com.
Okay.
Where you can put in where you're going and your dates and who's covered. And then it'll give you like options for plans. Most of their plans seem pretty like low too, like under $100, like $50.
Yeah, under. Yep. It was $50 to $100. And like I said, I got $1 million cover because I was going to Greece and Turkey for my birthday. It was, I think, in 2014. And so whenever I'm going, you know, I told you I'm going to Paris and Prague. So I will likely get some insurance for that too. You just don't want to be, especially if you're traveling. If I'm traveling stateside, you know, I have my regular health insurance. But if I'm traveling out of the country, you don't want to have to worry that should something happen to me, whether it's you just getting sick or you getting into an accident, you don't want to have to worry that, you know, you're not going to be able to receive the services that would save your life because you're not adequately covered. It's worth the $50 to get like insurance, you know, that's going to make sure that you have peace of mind. I never thought about that before, and I was always like, girl, who cares? I don't need that. It should no longer be, oh, should I? Honestly, it's under $100. Like I said, probably around $50 for a large amount of coverage and huge amount of peace of mind. Get it.
Okay, you're pretty passionate about it. I'm still like fitty-fitty.
You know what? I guess because when my friend died and they were trying to figure out how do we bring her body over, and money was tight and we actually had to raise money to do so, it made me realize, like, yeah, for $50, I don't want to put my family and friends through what to do with me should something happen. And so that's why, because before I was not even 50-50. I was kind of like, girl, no, I'm not spending my $50. I'm gonna use that $50 to eat out when I'm in Paris. But now I'm like, I've seen too many times when it's been needed, and for such a nominal fee, yeah, it's worth it.
But if your insurance already offers that kind of thing.
It depends. Yeah. No, I would definitely to check that. And it also depends up to one amount. If your insurance is offering $10,000, let's be real. You know, it's going to cost more than that to airlift you out. So then you might want to spend the $50 for a little bit more.
Yeah. Up to $50,000 it can cost. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, travel smart, Lisa. Travel safe. Thailand's awesome. I want to go to Thailand.
Me too. It's on my list of like.
I'm only going to London.
I'm like so like nervous. So for those of you who have like kids, this is just a question for me, right? Because I'm like, oh, me and Superman are like baby talk. We're like in the midst of trying, you know. And I'm like,
hey, I thought trying was fun, not trying.
I know. No, trying is definitely fun, but I guess part of me is like, wait, I have so many places I want to visit. Like, how long after you have a baby do you like go back to like? Being able to do different things. I know you're like, your life has changed forever.
You know what? We have really close friends and they took their, like, I don't even know how many, he was only a few months old. He was born in April and then it was the husband's, hey, Pam and Anthony. It was his birthday in like July, I want to say, or early August. And, or late August, and they took their baby on like a, they flew to Oregon and drove down the West Coast. Like, okay. Not even, like, a trip, but, like, going to hotels and stuff. But, like, they were, like, a road trip with their newborn baby. And they were just in Paris, and now he's only one. And they just, like, they just have the right attitude about it. That's what, like, they've said about traveling with a baby. If you have a good attitude and you're not stressed out, then the flight attendants will help you. Everyone sort of wants to make things, like, good for you. And, I mean, I'm sure it hasn't been a total cakewalk, but I think it can be possible.
Okay. Because that's just, like, my only nervousness. It's like, oh, my gosh. Like... I want to be a mom, and I'm sure a lot of women who are like, because I'm in my mid 30s, and I want to be a mom, but I'm not gonna lie, I'm like, I love my life now. Like, life is good. Like, life is better than good, and so part of me is afraid, like, oh gosh, like, how much, you know? And I know there's a lot of sacrifice, and I have set my life up in such a way that I could be home, you know, that, you know, I can make money passively, so I can like actively raise my child and stuff like that, but. I guess I'm worried about, like, well, what other things outside of the fact of, like, you know, time and energy. Like, I don't want to give up travel. I don't want to give up, you know, things that make me me. And I know people might say, you know, and I'm just like, well, to what extent? You know, because my mom was like the old school mom where, you know, she did. She gave up a lot. I mean, it was five of us. So, I mean, like, she didn't even get to sleep nights for up until I was really in college. She worked nights as a nurse on purpose so she could be home during the day for us. And so, you know, but that was a different dynamic because, you know, just like differences in like how much we made and stuff like that. But I guess I'm just like, you know, I know there's a lot of sacrifice when you have kids. And I wonder, do you ever get to like maintain a piece of yourself to still be yourself, because that's what makes me happy, you know?
God, I hope so.
I know, but I'm just saying.
Come on.
I see some new moms and I'm so scared. I'm like, oh my God, like what?
I mean, financial stability, I think, is important. It's not everything, but the fact that you are the budgetista of anyone's going to be able to do it, you probably can figure out how to make it work financially. I think, too, the values you have before you get married, before you have a kid, like, those hopefully stay the same, and you just find a way to, I think you'll, you know, what I've sort of heard is that it enhances the way that you travel, it changes the way that you see the world, it makes traveling more necessary in a way for parents. This is what I've heard. I'm not a parent, I haven't taken any children, small children abroad, but it, like, it gives a new reason to travel, to, like, expose your kids to different things and, like, see the world through their eyes. And I mean, you know, my friends got the cutest Airbnb that was like a family house. So they had a family room and a baby room. And they just, I mean, I want to be optimistic. But I mean, honestly, it kind of, you know, freaks me out, too.
Right.
But I feel like you can do it. I feel like we have to. We owe it to ourselves not to give up part of our lives, part of ourselves and what we love and get joy out of, you know, for children. But I also feel like, you know, what we don't know yet is the amount of joy that a baby will bring into our lives. Mm-hmm. I've heard it's awesome. The Yelp reviews are pretty, like, strong for children.
I see it, like, when, like, because I have Supergirl, so Superman has a daughter already, and I love her, you know, but there's nothing like your own. And I see when he looks at her, like, I can see, it's, like, otherworldly, like, when he looks at her, like, look at my baby, you know? Mm-hmm. And she also, like, his mother passed away a few years ago, and she is, like, the spitting image. I mean, from looks and from what I understand, I never met his mother. But from what I understand, even the way she, like, moves and operates and speaks. And so when he's looking at her, it's like he gets to see his mom again, but then he also sees, like, his child, and like he relishes in the sacrifice, and I could see that, you know, like whatever it takes, and he happily does so. And so, you know, and so I know it gives me like, okay, that will be, you know, but I don't, because it's weird, because like Supergirl, she's like such a bonus because I don't have to sacrifice for her financially because her mom is dope, super mom. She and I get along great. Her mom is amazing. He's amazing. So honestly, Supergirl, and she doesn't need me in like this parental sense. So instead, we're just like great friends. So I don't get to get the real feel of what it's like to have a child because all I get to do with Supergirl is have fun with her. I don't have to worry about the other responsibilities, you know?
Well, you have to think you also have a great support system. You have all those sisters that, yeah. I mean, you've put yourself in a strong position. Like, I mean, that's what I'm trying to do living with my in-laws. Like, we've purposefully at least said, okay, we need to be kind of like get to a financial point that we're comfortable with, but also being around the people to support us. So you can take some time off and you can have sitters and like, you know, people who are around to like support you. I think that's like the non-financial aspect of like making parenthood easier that people like overlook how important that familial support system is.
Yeah. So if you guys have some questions for us or you just have some feedback on this whole, we don't have no kids yet, but you do.
Yeah. Like what was the most financially surprising thing about having a baby, like having yes. young kids that just like surprised you? You never saw coming beyond diapers. We all know about diapers and like baby food and stuff like that. What else?
Yeah. What made you say, whoa, 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 whoa? Who knew? You can email us at thebapodcast@gmail.com. No, I got it right, right?
Nope. That is not our email address.
Darn it. Darn it. I thought I got it right. I don't know.
That
my
is
mind.
A good way to tweet us, though, at thebapodcast.
Okay.
You can email us at brownambitionpodcast@gmail.com.
Okay, brownambitionpodcast@gmail.com. My bad. I'm going to get it right one of these days. But you can tweet us at the BA Podcast.
Yes, ma'am.
you can tweet Mandy at Mandy Woodruff, Mandy with an I. And you can tweet me at the Budgetnista if you have some specific tips. So I had a book that I just bought. I know we like, you know, I don't really have a win, but I had a book. Where is my Kindle? I just bought. I love buying books.
Well, you just talked about a book. You read a lot.
I know. And
I
so,
download because a lot of books. I'm like a book hoarder. I'm like, oh, that looks good. I just download it real quick. You know, that one click button on Amazon is like the death.
It's the devil. It's the smart devil, but it's the devil.
Yes, it is. I'm just like, that looks good. Okay, I'll read this one day. I have so many books that I need to read.
Well, I like to keep like a nice like variety of, because what I hate is that when I'm ready to like read something good, and I don't have anything, so I like to have at least like two or three books like on my Kindle that I have not read at all. So when I'm like, oh, I want to read something, I don't have to like search Kindle for hours. I can just like go and get one. So here's my, instead of my win, I want to talk about the book. So this is a great book that I cannot wait. I've heard great things about it. It is called The Gatekeepers Are Gone, Hustle Plus Technology Equals Success by Lamar Tyler. And I'm super excited because it is the way that I have crafted the Budgetnista and the Dreamcatchers and my Live Richer movement, that gone are the days that you have to like go through major media outlets, you have to have huge sponsorships, all those things in order to be successful in your business, that those major gatekeepers are gone. There are people who are running multi-million dollar companies and who have never been on anyone's television show, never been in anyone's like magazine or anything like that. Instead, they've connected directly with the audience. And there's a great example of this young rapper named Chance the Rapper. Have you heard of him, Mandy?
Yeah, my little brother loves him.
Right? So everybody loves Chance the Rapper. He is like what we all hoped Kanye would be, but is not. So he actually wrote like five songs on Kanye's Life of Pablo album. And then everyone's favorite song, what is it called? It's called... it's a song that everybody knows it, but it's everyone's favorite song on Kanye's new album. But Chance is dope in that he refuses to sign with a major record label. He is completely independent. He has been approached several times. His new, he calls his albums like mixtape. Is it called Coloring Books? I think it's called Coloring Book. So his new album is like has done so well And, you know, of course, record labels can't understand why he won't sign with them. And he's just like, no. So he's had all these collaborations that he would not be able to do if he was under a record label. He's been able to do what he wants, how he wants, when he wants it, because he understands that the gatekeepers are gone and that you don't have to go to a record label to get your music to the masses. And he actually had the Grammys changed, like, their policy. And because before it was like, in order to be like nominated for a Grammy, you had to have a certain type of album, like, you know, to produce in the traditional way. But now they're his album is stream only, and they're allowing stream only albums to be nominated. So he might likely win a Grammy. So I just think, like, you know, if you're looking for a book about,
did he write that book?
No, the book is by Lamar Tyler. But to me, he's a perfect personification of the gatekeepers are gone. That you could be a success in your industry without going through the
My mother-in-law is singing really loudly out the hallway.
I can't hear her, but that's funny.
Oh, you can't? Okay,
no. Yes. Yes, mamacita, you better sing.
We were up till 2 a.m. dancing merengue in the living room. I could not keep up. I'm sorry, I just, like, hijacked your...
No, that's fine. So I think I'm excited to read that book, and I'll report back how much I like it. But I just got it, like, yesterday.
What's it called again? The Gatekeepers Are Gone?
The Gatekeepers Are Gone by Lamar Tyler.
You could have been a case study.
Right? Let me reach out to Lamar.
Oh, that's good. What's my win? Oh, my win. Wait, I have my notes. Oh, so this week, I'm so excited. This is the week of Queen Sugar, which is, ooh, it's like a book and a series that's starting on the OWN network. And I have, like, it's been a while since I've, like, maybe since Scandal premiered. But, like, I've been waiting for this because I love the book Queen Sugar. Ava DuVernay and Oprah teamed up to make it into a TV show. On the OWN network, and they're having a 2-episode premiere. I think I want to say it's on Wednesday. Check your local listings, or, you know, however you may find it if you do not have cable. No judging here. But I just want to support the show because it has, like, an amazing cast, and the story is so good, and it's like you don't really see a lot of, like, all minority casts telling this kind of story, I don't think. It's got a lot of good stuff. I don't want to ruin any of it. I don't want to, like, put any spoilers on what it's about, but check it out.
It looks good. I'm excited to see it too.
Yeah. Oh, I can do, like, a little, like, so it's about a woman who inherits a sugarcane plantation, not a plantation, a sugarcane farm from her dad who's passed away, and she moves from LA to this is how it is in the book. They may have changed it for the series, but from LA to Louisiana, and just inherits a sugarcane farm and has to deal with moving back home to her roots, and then, you know, learning how to run a farm, and she has, like, zero experience, and the town, like, kind of rallies around her. But it's got all this other drama, and her brother is really an interesting character, and, you know, there's a love interest. It's like a mother-daughter story. It's a good, good book. So I'd say read the book and then check out the series for sure.
Oh, okay, Queen Sugar.
And this continues my campaign to have Ava DuVernay be my best friend. So far, it's been unsuccessful.
That's my best friend. Yeah. You better. Ava, if you're listening, which I'm sure you're not, but you never know.
I want her to be on the show so bad, they keep saying no.
Don't worry, one day they're going to say yes. One day.
Yes.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.